Who is a principal associate at ABT Associates also, where he is senior advisor, for performance improvement, human resources for health, and organizational development. He has been working with incentive systems since 1978 and in development since 1998. He has lived in Jordan and Ethiopia and visited more than 30 countries for work. Before starting his development career, he was director for associate development at Honda of America. Mark?
Good morning. It's nice to see everybody show up on the last day. I bring greetings from my colleague Hanan Zaida, who couldn't make the trip from Amman to be here with us, but we did the project together. And neither one of us have a conflict of interest of any kind. This morning I want to make two main points about this performance-based incentive program we did. And so those of you that have to leave, you can write them down now. Number one is this performance-based incentive program was highly successful in improving provider performance. Number two, it involved no project money. So it's completely sustainable with the organization's money in-country, which is different than quite a few project-based incentive systems we see. So let me get a quick take of who I'm talking to here. How many people have worked in Jordan, the country of Jordan? Two? I make three, I guess. How many people have worked in the Middle East, North Africa region, MENA region? A few. And the last one, how many of you work in family planning as a public health issue? A lot more. Okay, good. This program took place in Jordan, which is a challenging region. It's a pretty hot spot these days. It's bordered by Syria in the north, Iraq, the West Bank, Palestinian State, Israel, and Saudi Arabia, which is fairly stable, still exerts a huge influence on the country of Jordan. So this is a pretty hot place to work these days. So why family planning? Why is this important? Why are we working at it in the country of Jordan? King Abdullah of Jordan, the absolute ruler of the country, did an interview on National Public Radio in the U.S. less than a year ago. And when the interviewer asked him, "What keeps you up at night, King Abdullah?" this pink line is what he talked about. So there's this huge influx of young people, he said, who are coming into the workforce. They're going to need jobs, they're going to need houses, they're going to need gasoline, and they're going to need water in the fourth driest country on the planet. So family planning is really important in Jordan. Jordan has a population of just over 6 million people during the last census. There's a large refugee influx from most of the countries that I just talked about. There's at least 500,000 Syrians there now. That's the official estimate. Depending on who you talk to, what agency you talk to, they say the unofficial, uncounted Syrians could be double that, mostly along the northern border. The total fertility rate in Jordan is 3.8 children per woman, which is pretty high, even for the region. In the MENA region, the average is 2.8. So there's a strong preference for big families there, which leads to the high slope of the pink line. And the contraceptive prevalence rate is 42%, which is fairly low average for the region. But the real problem is it's static. It's been static for 10 years. So this preference for large families has kept contraceptive usage relatively low for a middle-income country. So this is why family planning, this is why we're working there. So given this, what's the response? One of the responses is the U.S. government, through USAID, is working with the government of Jordan to work on family planning in the private sector and in the public sector. So our project at Apt Associates was to work, funded by USAID, to improve family planning in the private sector. And our project had two goals. One was to increase the use of family planning. Number two was to improve the service quality. And most of our work was done through the Jordanian Association for Family Planning and Protection, which is the largest NGO in the family planning NGO in the country. It has a network of 17 clinics, and you see two of the doctors there. Really importantly, it's an all-female staff. Those of you that work in MENA know that women have a strong preference for female providers in family planning and reproductive health, especially for things like IUD insertion. Most won't go to a male provider at all. And so we offered an array of assistance, training, infrastructure, system strengthening, to help the association. One of the first things we found is a need for incentives. So the problem we found is that of the 17 clinics, most were operating below optimum capacity. Only one was operating at capacity. And the root cause is the clinic staff really had no motivation to increase the number of visits. I call it the "it all pays the same" issue. So the clinic that saw 40 patients a day, the doctor got paid exactly the same amount as the doctor worked at the clinic where they saw 9 patients a day. So after working with the association, the intervention we decided to try was cash bonuses for increasing the number of visits. Just to do an incentives 101 for people that don't study the literature obsessively the way we do, there's decades of literature that say these are the things that make for effective incentive systems. They should be transparent, consistent, simple with a few measures, and win-win for the organization and the employee. And the best transparency is the employees should be able to calculate the bonus themselves. They should be able to take out their calculator and say, did I get a bonus this quarter and how much will it be? So they know there's no man behind the curtain. So here's where the rubber hits the road. At JFPP, we spent 6 months working with clinic staff, JAFPP management, to come up with these key performance indicators and the targets. For us, it was really critical that everybody buy in to the targets. So it could be challenging but attainable. And the clinic staff, in the end, picked these and agreed on them. So the first key performance indicator was the number of clinic visits per quarter. The target for that KPI was either a 5% increase over the same quarter last year or reaching and staying at an optimal capacity. And for most clinics, that was 35 patients a day. KPI number two was adherence to clinical guidelines. We didn't want numbers to go up, but quality to suffer. So the target for that was 80% or more adherence to clinical guidelines according to supervision checklists. There's a good supervision system there. And the third KPI is client satisfaction. And the target was 80% positive reviews from clients. So in order for a clinic to reach the bonus at the end of the quarter, they had to reach all three targets. They met two, they didn't get the bonus. And here's how it was distributed. It was awarded on a clinic performance basis. Either everybody who worked at the clinic got it or nobody did in order to foster teamwork. Most clinics have between 5 and 10 employees. The cash was distributed directly to the employees, cash in their pay envelope. And that's how it was distributed, based on salary level. And I want to point out here that this amount of money is significant. A doctor could almost double her annual salary by meeting the targets every single quarter. So this was significant to them, significant amount of money to them. And so far, we've implemented the bonus system over 6 quarters in a stepwise implementation. The first 3 quarters, we introduced the targets for visits only. The next 3 quarters, the visits for visits plus clinical guidelines. And next quarter, quarter 7, we'll add the client satisfaction. They wanted to get used to it step by step as they went. So how did we do? Looking across 6 quarters, these are the number of clinics that met the targets for visits. So in the first quarter, even after a big orientation campaign, after technical assistance, demand generation that had been going on for over a year, demand generation activities, four clinics met the targets and received the bonus. And you look across to the quarter six, the last one for which we have good data, we're happy to say that all the clinics reached the targets and received the bonus. And the increase in visits that you would expect that go along with that. And let me talk, I want to talk a couple slides about the cost-benefit, because this is important. I think too often in development, when we do pay for performance systems, they work really well and the project funds it, but then the project ends and the incentives go away. And what we know about that is that performance levels usually drop to sub-baseline levels because the incentive's not only gone, but people are angry because that they're not getting paid for performance they used to be paid for. So let's take 2012 as the example. If you look at the expected number of visits based on all past years, we would have expected about 117,000. We actually got 128,000, a difference of 11,000 visits in 2012. So a revenue, JFPP earns on broad average about 4.9 Jordanian dinar per visit. A dinar is worth about $1.35. The actual revenue, because of increased visits, 630,000, or a difference of about 55,000 dinar increase in income. The bonus in 2012 cost the association 50,000 dinar. So there was a net income of 5,000. So this answers the question, does the bonus system cost the association money or does it pay for itself? And clearly in this case, it paid for itself. But we also wanted to project it out. CFOs always ask about incentive systems. This is great, but if everybody reaches the bonus, is it going to bankrupt the bonus pool or bankrupt the organization? So we projected out what if all clinics meet the optimal client load, what would happen? And so using a baseline including 2012, it's a similar analysis. The optimal, if everybody reached the optimal level, there'd be about 196,000 visits, difference of 73,000, difference in revenue of 360,000. The bonus during that year would be 77,000, so a net income of 282. So does the bonus system pay for itself? Yes, 3.5 to 4 times it pays for itself. So this tells us that long after the project is gone, the association will have funding to continue the bonus system. And just some qualitative feedback from the clinic staff, because sometimes when you apply pay-for-performance systems, the pressure to improve performance leads to lower job satisfaction. We didn't want that to happen. We couldn't afford to lose female providers. So we did focus group interviews and structured focus group discussions and structured interviews. And these are the big four points that came out. The system's clear, simple. They really could pull out their calculator and look at their logbooks and see whether they were going to get the bonus. All employees were happy to receive a reward for good performance. You work extra hard, you get extra money. That's not hard to figure out. There was some dissatisfaction that low-performing clinics can improve 5% and get the same bonus as a high-performing clinic. So a doctor at a clinic seeing 40 patients said, "Wait, I'm getting the bonus, but the doctor at the clinic that improved from 10 to 11, seeing 11 patients, and she gets the same bonus." And there's some truth in that. And all managers like the team-building nature of group rewards. They said the fact that it was all or nothing let people fill in for each other when they were gone without being asked, really helped each other with their jobs when they were having a problem. So to conclude, performance did improve. To go back to my two points, performance really did improve. It is a financially sustainable system, not only financially sustainable, but it makes the association extra money. And it is a win-win for the employees and for the association. Thank you.